Okay, maybe we just let her do that and we talk to her on the phone or something.
The problem is then the all doesn't work.
Okay. So they won't even be able to hear us unless we would go in our offices and log on individually, which.
Barb, make sure, call Leanne, make sure you two are on the same page before you do anything. Please.
Oh, okay, that's positive. Cool.
Everybody, if you can hear me, this is Linda Merkin. We're having some technical difficulties. We're going to hope to start this meeting soon, so please just hang on. But if the L is not working, the L is working.
Oh, there we are.
But who's doing that?
Tim's.
Oh.
Camera home right in.
Okay.
All right.
Should be good to go.
All right. Audio? Zoom is not recording yet, though. Or is it?
It says it's recording.
I don't see it flashing.
I
think she paused it.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, that's what is Barb coming back in?
Yeah, it's recording.
Oh, okay.
It is recording. She clicked it and the recording paused.
So it's recording, and before I start the meeting, Barb, are you running it from here now?
Yes.
Okay,
excellent.
Good morning. It's 10:08 a.m. on July 21st, 2020. We're starting the Story County Board of Supervisors meeting a little late. Sorry about that. We are originating from the administration building and providing public access via Zoom. I've called the meeting to order, and please join us if you would like to in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. We are having this meeting public access via Zoom because it's impractical to have an in-person meeting right now because of social distancing guidelines that we're following in the county. I would entertain a motion for adoption of today's agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Heddens, second by Olson. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda is adopted. Next, we have updates on COVID-19. Are there any updates from staff? If not, any updates from supervisors?
The only thing I have is numbers statewide. I haven't looked at Story County yet that shows as of today. And I know that they had some issues over the weekend with some of their information and updating. It says that statewide 5 deaths and 512 new cases. But I have not looked to see what Story County has yet.
Thank you. Supervisor Olson, did you have something?
No, I just was going to say none. Then.
Okay. Then we'll go on to public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody in the public who would like to address anything on the agenda today, unless you're, of course, presenting during the agenda? Okay, seeing nobody, I'll close public comment number one. Next is discussion and consideration of items brought before the board with requests for immediate action. Are there any? Hearing none, I'll go on. And item nine is recognition of Sue McCaskey for her 27 years of service. Sue, we'd like to recognize you right now. And why don't you come right up here And we're going to take a picture with all of us with masks on. How's that for timely? Sue, 27 years you've given your all to Story County, and we appreciate it. We're going to join you up here for a picture then.
We're coming around. No, we're coming to you.
Oh, we're coming to you.
We're going to come to you.
Watch out for the cords.
And we wish you the best in your retirement.
Yeah. Yeah, turn that around.
Scoot this, oh, the owl, pardon me. This far enough?
Aye.
Keep going. We're all in the owl.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Would you like to say anything for the record?
Just for the record, Story County is a good place to work. It's got a lot of wonderful people here, doing a lot of good things. I think the county is something everybody here that lives here should be proud of. And I'm just really going to miss it. This has kind of been my deal for the last 27 years, but there's time to move on and let some else take the helm.
We're going to miss you, and what you have done for the animals in this county has been amazing. You took there was no shelter. There was barely animal control, and what you have done, Sue, has been remarkable. And you know about the rescuers, about, you know, you make the difference for one animal at a time.
Yep.
You have made the difference for thousands. Thank you so much.
Thank you for everything you've done.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you. Enjoy your time.
I will.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we'll go on now to agency reports, and we have a report from Iowa Able in your report, and I think is Anna Magnuson on the phone? I think I saw you earlier.
Just
need to unmute. Would you unmute, Anna?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Do you have anything that you'd like to add or to highlight from your report?
No, just congratulations to Sue. What an amazing lady.
Yep.
The only thing that I will add to the report that's in front of you is that I am proud to report that last Friday, we did our first pilot program loan, and so our loan recipient was able to pick up her car at Honda, and so it was a great moment because we are excited for her to be able to have transportation, and she is already excited about being able to pick up more jobs because she doesn't have to rely on public transportation. She'll be able to have the flexibility to work more, and especially during this time, that financial empowerment is important. So we were excited about that, which happened last week. Are there any questions about the report at all?
Supervisors, do you have any questions?
I just have one question, Anna.
Yes.
My question is, have you seen since the changes due to COVID, have you seen an uptick in requests for assistance, or has it been pretty much the same?
So we've seen an uptick in requests for, in particular, for some reason, home repairs. And so that is one of our new pilot programs where we're able to, they had to wait till July to launch. But we also developed a partnership with the Habitat for Humanity in Blackhawk County, which I know is not in Story County, but we're hoping to do that in Story County as well, just because our applicants are being hit pretty hard from the income coming in and not being able to work. Many of our applicants are vulnerable when it comes to and don't feel comfortable going to work, which of course impacts their income. And then when things happen to their home, then we're seeing an increase in phone calls for that. So right now we're relying on not only if they don't qualify for our program and reaching out to community resources like United Way, Habitat for Humanity, and other resources to make sure that we're able to help our applicants.
Great, thank you.
Anna, I just want to congratulate you for your enthusiasm. Thank you for your enthusiasm. And congratulate you for thinking outside the box and expanding with the box, especially in the KHOI partnership and initiative. That's not something normally people would normally put into kind of your area of operations. And yet it looks like it's worked out well. I happen to know Anna from Kiwanis, and she just did a presentation to the Kiwanians about some of the KHOI programming that has come about as a result of the relationship with KHOI. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. Well, I think it's been, there's so many resources in Story County that are willing to help, be able to work together to help be able to serve members in our community. And KHOI is one of them, United Way. I've met Jody Stumbo from Emergency Residence Services, although I think they have a new name. So I'm very proud. I mean, it's been 2 years. I just remember my first Story County presentation with Jill Crosser 2 years ago. And I just am so proud to be part of this community because everybody is just willing to work together. And in spite of COVID-19, which, oh my gosh, 2020 has been a crazy year, but in spite of COVID-19, that we're all working together to be able to make this a great place to live, work, and play. So thank you to all of you for helping make that possible. We're not letting COVID-19 take us down. That's right.
We can certainly tell that from your plan that you included in your annual report. That's one of the most thorough plans I've seen and for a relatively small office and how to get everything done and things not to miss. So you've been doing a good job taking care of each other as you've continued to provide services, and we appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Any other questions for Anna or anything else?
No.
Thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. And thank you for the thorough report and the good work you're doing.
Thank you very much.
Next, we'll go to consideration of minutes. We have minutes from the July 14th meeting. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Next, consideration of personnel actions. We have none. Going on to consideration of claims. I would entertain a motion for approval of claims as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Claims are approved. Next, we'll go to consent agenda. We have 9 items, it looks like. Are there any that need to be pulled?
No.
If not, I'd entertain a motion for approval of claims as or consent agenda as listed.
So moved.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda items approved. Public hearing items is next. We have none. Next, we'll then go to additional items in Bark Steinbach for discussion consideration of No Wait Inside appointment software. Bark?
Good morning, Board.
Good morning.
This is kind of asking permission after the fact, because we met last Wednesday at our CCMT meeting and discussed opening to the public, of course, and our options. The one option that we all decided on was to try an appointment type approach. And we looked at what other counties are using, and we like the product called the cost is $29 a month just for the use, but then there's an additional 5 cents per transaction, including email and text. So we're not quite sure what the final cost would be, but we'd like to ask the board to agree to the county using this software. I did get the credentials on Friday and set up the recorder and the treasurer to test this. And if they find that it's something that is useful for their departments, we'll roll it out to everyone else. Do you have any questions?
How long were you looking at rolling it out with the treasurer and recorder's office? Is it just a couple weeks or?
A couple weeks. The treasurer's off this week, so just the recorder has it. I'm not sure if he had a chance to do anything on Friday. He got an email notification that it was open for him. So
gotcha.
When they feel like they've learned what they can and are ready to roll it up, then we'll go ahead. I anticipate it only taking a couple weeks.
And we had discussed at the CCMT meeting about some of us logging in from our own personal accounts to schedule bogus appointments, if you will, test appointments. So if you could communicate maybe with Artie and Lori in the treasurer's office and with Recorder Herridge, just to say, let us know when we should start booking those appointments. Yeah, the bogus appointments, the practice appointments.
The test appointments.
I have a couple questions or maybe comments. First is, we've not made a final decision on if or how we're reopening. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that that's still something the supervisors have not decided on. And there are some other questions that have arisen. It's not just the question of using appointment software, but some other details that we have to work out. So I just want to make sure that everybody understood that. And then secondly, I was going to ask Barb, since it's $29 a month and for some test emails, that's not going to be a huge amount of money. Can that just run through IT for now? And then you come back to the supervisors and let us know if you need further funding, if we're going to use this on a full scale.
I believe we did get our first invoice and I asked for it via purchase order. So should be seeing that come through very soon.
Okay, great. So any other things we should talk about before considering this? And I thank you for your work in, researching this and getting it set up. And so then if there's nothing else, I'd entertain a motion to approve us doing a pilot with a no wait inside appointment software.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, and further discussion? Not Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you, Barb.
Thank you, Barb.
Next, we are going to discussion and consideration of hiring freeze exemption request for animal shelter attendants, Sandra King and Alyssa Wignall. Morning, Sandra.
Morning, Board. Right before you today to request a hiring freeze exemption to fill a position in the animal shelter. As you know, the animal control director is retiring effective Friday, July 24th. As a result, that leaves a big hole to be filled. In addition to that, an animal shelter attendant, Cindy Jones, has resigned effective July 31st, and that's going to leave another big hole. She was the med's go-to person, so we would request that we have authority to fill that position.
I have a couple questions, but does anybody else have questions?
Go ahead.
Supervisor Olson. So my question is more a little bit of a comment just in, first of all, I want to say thank you to Cindy for her service also to the county. And she added much to the shelter staff. So as we look forward, are we targeting someone who might have experience with medications? And second of all, how does that reflect in the salary range of the job posting?
I will be looking at the job description that's out there a little more closely to see if we want to add something to that. Staff that's currently there, I know that Anna has been there many, many years, and she also has some experience in that area. However, she is animal control and will be the only animal control officer there while the other position is vacant. The director position is vacant, so if she's out on a call or something like that, she's not going to be on site to be able to answer those types of questions. But yeah, that would certainly be something that we would look at to see if that needs to be included or not.
Thank you. That's my only question.
So we don't have any qualification requirements that anybody have any kind of experience with meds?
Well, I don't think that's currently in the job description. Of course, as I mentioned, not to say that it can't be added, but in terms of it being there now, I think all of the Animal shelter attendants are the same. Education and experience is listed as high school diploma or GED, moderate experience in a similar role or equivalent combination of education and experience. So pretty generic. I think over the years, you know, employees develop that expertise and just become good at it. And of course, she has other relationships with animals on outside of work that, you know, also helped her to hone those skills in that area.
So the animal control officer's job specs don't include any specific training or experience with meds either. It's just for all of the people who've done this, it's just that they've learned about it on the job.
Yeah, I would have to double check animal control officer to see if it has. My guess is no, but I would have to, you know, do line by line to double check.
I believe Sandra's accurate about that not being specific for that. It is, unless someone's taking a formal course through, I think, DMAC or over at ISU Vet Med Tech, or Vet, it is pretty much pick it up on the job kind of training. But if someone would come in and have some extensive experience that way, I just wanted to make sure we're covered. Cindy also was known as, all the staff are really good with animals, but Cindy was almost the dog whisperer sometimes when you had a temperamental dog. She can do that. That is learned, and yes, we do have experienced people. I was just more interested in the med, having worked as a vet tech a long time ago, that knowing those meds, you know, I think what will happen from my perspective is to make sure that we're doing the best by the animals and we're in compliance with all laws, etc. I suspect there'll be some more phone consultations and therefore billings with veterinarians.
What if there's certain meds that we can, that are just generic kind of non-prescription things that our staff can administer versus ones that a veterinarian has to prescribe?
Yes, there's a combination of that. And Cindy, of course, has been tapped to, you know, put her expertise in writing to the extent that she can, which she has done that in terms of the policies and procedures. And in addition to the shelter manual that I've had staff to work on to try and pull experiences from both Sue and Cindy before they leave.
And one other question I guess I just have is the purpose of asking for the exemption is not to recruit somebody with specific medical experience that our other staff don't have. It's just an issue of number of staff.
Yeah, right now it's to fill the position. So that is not extra burden on staff having those additional holes in the department.
I might, if Lisa has a question, we'll let her ask it first.
I don't have a question. Okay.
I might add, just in general, as we've been looking at the animal control director also, and goals for the animal control shelter and department going forward, and I know that Sandra has done a really good job of soliciting staff input on this, but one of the things might be some training, and if in fact there might be like the Iowa Federation of Humane Societies or ARL or even over sometimes over at ISU, if there are opportunities that we could send some staff, regardless of who it is, to training related to pharmaceuticals or whatever. So I think, you know, that would be something that we just want to look at, because yeah, it's not specific that we hire somebody with those skills, but then we also, maybe it's time to increase the skills even further and the knowledge of those people who are already at the shelter.
Yeah, they have had some training. Sue has set up some opportunities for them to visit vets and get some general training. However, training in general, ongoing professional development is certainly something that I have been talking to the department about revisiting.
Yeah. It would be good to have more than one person get the training so we don't end up, so we have redundancy and don't end up again with, well, Cindy knew how to do that, but nobody else does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that she's put things in writing and the procedures. That will be helpful to people in the meantime. So what we're really talking about is not somebody specifically for a medical specific position, just a workforce position.
Staff. Shelter attendant, yeah.
Supervisor Hedgins, any questions?
I don't have any answers to the questions that I was inquiring about.
So I, no, I don't.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion.
Okay, I move that we allow, we waive the hiring freeze and allow recruitment and hiring of a shelter attendant.
Second.
Further discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Edens?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you.
We'll go on to department reports. We have none listed. We have no other reports listed. Upcoming agenda items, I have none.
I don't have any.
Next week, I believe Darren Moon will be putting on a discussion of the DOT's plans for Highway 30 interchanges around Nevada. And that's been prompted by some citizen inquiries. Also, the DOT has a July 31st input deadline for the next phase as they move forward for fiscal year 23.
I would also add on to that I was chatting with a Nevada City Council member earlier, and in their City Council meeting this upcoming Monday, they will be taking public comments via Zoom. If anybody out there wants to comment to the City Council next Monday, that's another opportunity. And of course, they can comment next Tuesday with us via Zoom as well. Okay, Supervisor Edens, did you?
I don't have anything, no.
Okay, I don't have anything else either. Next, we'll go to discussion and consideration of HRDA's request to clarify and expand allowable uses for Story County's asset funding for public transportation. Julia Costello, are you on the call?
Brooke is.
Okay, Julia was listed. Brooke?
Hi, good morning. Julia's on as well.
Okay.
I'm here. I'm trying to get my video to work.
Well, we understand this because you were talking to Senator Grassley or just before us. So we appreciate your time here this morning.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of start. I'll work on my video later, but I'm going to just kind of start with I try to do this at every meeting just to give an overview of HRDA, that we are a quasi-governmental agency. We were established by a 28E agreement with the state, and we have been in service since 1981, serving Iowa's Region 11, which does include Story County. And then again, just gave a little map that shows there's 35 designated state designated transit systems. 16 of those are rural like HRDA, and then 19 of those are urban. And the types of services that are provided by public transit in the state of Iowa are fixed route, which are traditional services like SciRide and DART and CAN bus, and then flag stops where there's an established route, but no stops are actually marked. And then deviated routes establish a route with marked stops and published schedules. Schedules have enough time built in to deviate and also provide paratransit services. And then there's the demand response, which is door-to-door, which is our current service, except current service pre-COVID. Now that we're in COVID, we're doing door-to-door, we're doing curb-to-curb most of the time, except for the Dial-A-Ride program, which we still provide door-to-door services for. So we have worked on a business plan during COVID to help our transit system be more sustainable and looking at how we can provide more service less expensively to serve more people. And we worked with the Community Transportation Association of America to come in and work in some of the different counties to kind of look at what we can do. And one of the things that we actually have looked at is doing more scheduled type stops in some of our more rural areas and specific days that we're operating there, so that there would be specifics on every community being served It just may not be every single day, but every single community in, especially in Story County and all of the rest of our region would actually have services. And then to throw some statistics out there, this shows what what we've done this year. So we've had over 161,000 rides. That does include what we've done during COVID, and to show how big of a change that was for us last year, we provided 264,780 rides across our region, and now we're only at 161 for this year. So COVID hit us very, very hard. It dropped our ridership by about 90%. So, and then we put some these graphs together that shows what our funding sources are. And as you can see, we have where the rides are, what the purpose of the trips are, and also what the funding sources are. Just to give you an idea of the variety of trips that we provide and then the different types of funding that we receive. So Brooke, do you want to go over that part?
Sure. So just to clarify on a couple of things, on the first graph, the trips by type, program service is going to be anytime we're taking people to a program. So that might be Heartland or something that's done in conjunction with Mainstream, just to give you a couple examples of what those programs might be. And of note, employment transportation is only about 12% of the total trips that we provide in the given year. So under the Story County funding sources, we really have two types of funding. We receive operational assistance and we receive capital funding. So for operating assistance, historically contract revenue has been one of the biggest portions of our funding stream. And that might be contracts with Medicaid, or it would even include contracts with CICS. That has changed dramatically over the last few years, and we'll show that here a little bit later. But federal transit assistance, FTA, there's kind of a misconception about what that funding is. It can only reimburse at a maximum of 50%. So for example, our preliminary numbers for fiscal year 2020 have our operating expenses in Story County at over $623,000. And we don't receive that much funding to even get to 50%. We only received $156,000 in federal assistance. So this particular fiscal year, and again, these are preliminary numbers since our fiscal year, our books haven't actually closed yet. FTA only comprised about 34% of our revenue stream. State transit assistance was at 7%. Fare boxes, the passenger fares that are paid, and local tax would compose the asset funds that we receive from the state, from the city and the county. And then other funding at 8%, which would include the United Way, advertising that we sell on the back of the vehicles, donations, and grants that HRTA receives. So for capital funds, we primarily receive those funds from FTA as well. And they usually come down every time we get a contract for a vehicle to be replaced. It can be at a different amount. It depends on the type of funding that's being brought through FTA. And it also varies from fiscal year to fiscal year in administration. So sometimes we see those be at 87% or 90%, but most commonly it's at 85%. So the 5311 funds that we receive in operating assistance are not the type of funds that can be used for capital. They are restricted to operating. To talk a little bit about the specifics with our statistics this year in Story County, we had 32,674 rides. Again, these are, you know, a little preliminary. They may get adjusted as we finish out our reporting. We had 744 unique riders.
That's definitely down. In fiscal year 19, we had 47,000 rides. And when this happens with COVID and making such a great impact in reducing the number of trips we're providing, we still have some fixed costs. So the cost per trip goes up. And what we experienced during this time is that our cost per trip during COVID increased to $52.91. So that is an average cost. You know, every trip is a little bit different in how far they're traveling, but just to give you an idea of how dramatically the reduced ridership with our costs have actually increased that cost per trip for us to provide. So when we talk about some of the changes that happened before COVID, in that contract revenue that we referenced earlier, if we take a look at regional, what our funding looked like a few years ago, the state Medicaid made some significant changes with regard to SCL. And I know we've talked to the Board of Supervisors about this quite a few times. We've referenced the challenges, but we wanted to kind of put it in a way that you can see how this happened and how it affected HRDA. So going back to fiscal year 2017, which is when they made the changes with the Supported Community Living Program, we provided 121,000 trips and were reimbursed at over $1.9 million for the services provided. And of course, the SCL providers themselves weren't subsidizing any of that because Medicaid, we were billing Medicaid directly for those trips. In 2018, we saw really the full impact of what that looked like. And you can see how the ridership dropped in about half. Reimbursements went down by over $800,000. But the SCL providers themselves that Medicaid said was responsible for paying for that transportation communicated that they really didn't have the funding to be able to pay for those rides. So they were providing a reimbursement at close to what our general public rate would be. So we were able to recoup about $37,000 from them. And then in 2019, you can see how it just continued to decline, although we did renegotiate some of those rates up a little bit higher. And so you'll see that the SCL providers, there was more revenue reimbursed to HRDA there, but it still doesn't make up the deficit of what we experienced with the decrease in reimbursements through the Medicaid program. And as we talked about before, we had experienced some layoffs due to these revenue shortfalls, and we did exhaust $1.5 million in reserve funds in an attempt to continue to provide those services because we understand how important they are. And we've talked about this a little bit before, but the state and federal funding is a formula that it takes into consideration the other transit providers in the state, not just HRDA. However, one of the challenges is it's based on what we did 2 years ago. So in fiscal year 2020, our funding levels from state and federal dollars were based on the services provided in fiscal year 18. And you can see how those rides under the Medicaid program, how they were reduced and how the revenues were reduced as well. So as we get into fiscal year 2021, obviously we're expecting that to continue to go down as you can see the ridership continue to decrease as well. Just, you know, continues to kind of compound on the problem we experienced. So when we look at services and funding, we've had quite a new challenge this year. I think Julia's going to cover some of that.
So, like I said before, with the pandemic, our demand decreased about 90%. We remained open to serve anyone who needed to get to any trip that they needed to get to. However, the demand was much less. That also required that we do some additional layoffs, and most of those were our drivers. And the other thing that we experienced with our drivers is we had a number of them that are in the high risk category for COVID-19, and they chose to not continue to drive during this pandemic out of fear for themselves or one of the loved ones that they lived with. So we have, I believe, just a little over 20 drivers on our staff now, and we did have about 80. So we have significantly decreased that. With that, the revenues obviously decreased as well. We went fare-free for 3 months just as a safety precaution for both the riders and our drivers and any of the staff people that would have had to handle the money. And we weren't doing any contract services for nursing homes or other facilities because they had closed their buildings down as well. But we had some increase in expenses because there's all of the PPE that we had to buy. And during the first part of that pandemic, it was very, very difficult to get the supplies that we needed, from masks to cleaning products, sanitary gloves and all of that. So we did pay much higher cost than what they would have normally been. I can tell you that we have been fortunate now to find some suppliers that are much more reasonable, and we are stocking up for that because we think that this is going to be, a longer term thing that we will be forever changing the way that we clean and sanitize our buses and disinfect them. So we did get some CARES Act funding, and our new business plan was adopted. And the CARES Act funding was federal funding specifically for public transit systems to get them to be able to continue to be sustainable during COVID, with the decrease in ridership, but the need to still get people to essential services, whether that was getting people to their jobs or getting people to dialysis or, medical appointments that they needed. And so HRDA was fortunate enough to get some CARES Act funding. And then some other things that happened was FTA has some really strict regulations on public transit, and they were able to lift some of those that also allowed us to do things that we wouldn't normally have been able to do, which would be deliver home-delivered meals or I'm trying to think of what else. Use our vehicles for other things besides just transporting people is what they were allowed us to do. So we had worked a little bit with United Way, and Loris obviously knew about this as well. And we notified the volunteer center there in Story County as well. If anybody needed our vehicles for uses other than transporting people, we would be able to do that. And now we are, so we have a phased-in approach in returning to service levels, and we've been in contact with our community partners such as Heartland and Mainstream, Friendship Arc, a lot of those in Story County, letting them know what we're able to do and trying to find out what they're planning on doing and how they're going to be returning to services. And unfortunately, those just kind of seem to keep, we think we have a plan in place and then something happens and it's just being delayed more and more. But we're trying to make sure that we are being proactive in notifying everybody of what we are able to do with our staffing levels. One of the other things that we have done on our vehicles is we have blocked off seats, so there are only a certain amount of people that are allowed to be on the buses, safely distancing. And we have put barriers around our drivers so that there is that they're better protected, as well as the passengers. And we are requesting that they wear masks, requiring our drivers wear masks. And even though we're collecting fares again, it's all hands-free, so there's no interchange. And we have also put in some safety measures on how to secure wheelchairs where we require that the passenger not only have a mask on, but they turn away from the driver and they don't speak to the driver while the driver's down on the ground trying to secure them. And we're the drivers have masks and shields and gloves and all types of disinfectant to keep the buses clean. So that's what we are trying to do in order to get through this pandemic. So Brooke, do you want to go with the 5311 and 5307 funds?
Sure.
Julia?
Yeah.
Can you hear
me? Yes, I can.
Oh, okay, good. Could you remind us how much you received in CARES Act funding?
We received 2.6 million for our entire region, and broken down, that was for Story County. Brooke, can you help me out how much it was just for Story County?
Yes, it was for fiscal year 2020, it was $166,271.
So, and Brooke, would you like to point out that it sounds like it's a big difference percentage-wise or reduction, but that's because all administration funds are split out, correct? So that when the CARES money came, there is an allocation for administration, and then there's an allocation for each county.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep, that's correct. HRDA treats each county like it's its own department, and we track all of the expenses and revenues accordingly. We also track the administrative expenses separately.
Thank you.
And those CARES Act funds, did allow us specifically to cover costs that we would not have normally incurred, which is all of the personal protective equipment. And we could use it because the cost of the trips went up significantly when ridership went down significantly. So we were able to use that funding as well to help fill in some of those gaps as well.
And that was a grant, correct? That's not none of that has to be paid back. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay, any other questions regarding that? If not, Brooke can go ahead and talk about the FTA 5311 and 5307 funding.
Okay. So HRDA receives 5311 funds through the Iowa DOT, and 5311 funds are intended for operating assistance in rural areas. 5307 funds are federal funding that our urban counterparts receive to provide service in urbanized areas. And those dollars can be reimbursed, the 5311 funds can be reimbursed at up to 50% of eligible operating expenses. 5307 funds can be reimbursed at up to 80% of eligible expenses. HRDA also receives funding through our contract with SciRide to operate the Dial-A-Ride program, the paratransit service. Those are 5310 funds that SciRide receives and uses to help cover those expenses. The 5310 funds are earmarked for elderly and disabled transportation. So in looking at our asset funding for fiscal year 21, there were a few things of note. The city of Ames has allocated almost $41,000, and that's for service through the asset program for trips within the city of Ames. Now, the city of Ames does have a municipal transit levy. And in 2019, that levy was set at 63 cents, which brought in about $1.8 million to help with SciRide's operating budget. Now, obviously they already have a municipal transit levy, and so the funding that they're providing to HRDA comes through either the either through the Dial-A-Ride program that we operate for SciRide, or again through that asset funding, which has historically been Health and Human Service and Nature. Story County funds for fiscal year 21 is allocated at over $110,000, with the local option at another $3,000. And then the United Way did a reduction. Again, you know, COVID has affected them as well. And so we're at just under $8,000 for this year. In previous years with the city of Ames, HRDA's reimbursement requests were done at 1/12 per month. And that was just something that we did to help for budgetary purposes with HRDA in working with the staff at the city of Ames to do that, you know, just keep things consistent. For Story County, it has always been reimbursed on a per trip basis. So we would generate a report out of our scheduling software and pull any of the trips that the customer's home city is not Ames, and where no other funding source such as Medicaid, for example, or CICS is in place. And then that would leave us with the folks who would be eligible for asset funds through Story County. And then the United Way had an automatic reimbursement program where we just received our allocation in 1/12 every month. We didn't have to request it. That is changing for fiscal year 21, and it'll be done on a per trip basis as well. So kind of note here, when we talk about that $40,000 from the city of Ames, their unit rate for fiscal year 20 was $15.72. So if we take that $40,993 and divide it by that per unit rate, that means we only have enough asset funds from the city of Ames to cover 2,608 trips. In July of 2019, our pre-COVID times, we provided 2,011 trips under the asset program in the city of Ames. And as we mentioned a couple minutes ago, those federal dollars, the 5311 funds, are for rural communities. And we've recently been given some updated guidance from the DOT that we need to make sure that we're showing how we're funding the trips within the city of Ames that are not done under the Dial-A-Ride program. So when looking at that and understanding that during COVID, we have funding through the asset program from Story County that we aren't drawing down at 100% due to lack of demand and lack of utilization, we really wanted to take a look and see if it could potentially make sense to use some of those funds to help with service in the city of Ames. And we want to also understand that the impact of what we do, it does impact the Dial-A-Ride program as well. So because we partner with SciRide to do those trips, and it is done under the 5310 funds, we have had a good choice or a good partnership because we were able to blend the funding sources. So whether that's through the contract with Aging Resources and taking folks to the doctor and taking folks to Heartland, they may be a senior citizen, but they may not qualify for the Dial-A-Ride program themselves. That could also be folks on the CICS funding that live within Ames and getting service within Ames. All of that cost sharing and that funding blends together to make the cost per trip lower for all of our different services that we offer. So our concern would be if we don't do something to kind of help with the trips in Ames, then the Dial-A-Ride service, the cost is going to dramatically go up. And as Julia said, with our community partners such as Heartland, and looking even at Mainstream and Friendship Arc, as they're trying to build their plans to return to normal, we do feel some sense of urgency to let them know what is this going to look like for transportation within the city of Ames. And to clarify, we're talking about trips that are done wholly within Ames, because if the service goes between Ames and other communities, it can still be considered rural and funded with $5311. We're really talking about those that are done wholly within the Ames community. So, sorry,
this is Loris. So just looking at just for the 5311 funds that can't be used to help do trips and AIMS anymore, those funds, however, can be used for the rural transit and that would be substituted for asset funding, correct, that from the county. So in addition, so really what you're asking for is kind of a switch, right? Is that to be able to bill AIMS trips under the asset funds, but county residents aren't losing out because they're getting the 5311 funding. You're kind of just flipping where the money comes from.
Right, and being able to show that the trips that are done within AIMS are funded without using those $5311 dollars. That's, you know, really what we're looking at. But yes, anyone who lives outside of AIMS, even if they're traveling to and from AIMS, they can still, those trips can still use 5311 funding.
So that in itself is no impact at all. Related at least to Story County, non-AIMS trips at all.
Correct.
I mean, the writers don't see anything different. It's just which pot you're drawing the money out of.
Correct, yes.
And if this is Julia, and if we do focus our 5311 funds in only serving the rural communities, what we're looking at is how can we increase services to those that are in the more rural areas by combining, by using only our 5311 funds plus some asset funds for the community or for the rural areas, but not lose out on still serving those in the city of Ames. We just can't use the 5311 funds.
Just so I'm clear, the 5311 funds are federal dollars?
They are federal dollars.
The DOT sends all the checks. Okay. They all funnel through the DOT,
so
but they're actually
really,
fed.
Right, so the 5311 dollars are federal dollars, and you're looking to swap federal dollars potentially with county dollars. Is that correct?
Correct.
It's not swapping city and county, it's federal dollars with county money.
Correct. Right.
Because the federal dollars have very strict regulations on how they can be used.
So now, and the impact to CIRA, the impact then within the city of Ames is where it gets a little more detailed and complicated, correct? Because loss of rides in Ames or loss of the revenue to pay for riders that are going in Ames within Ames boundaries, that will impact your dial-a-ride rider, could impact the cost for dial-a-ride, meaning the city of Ames would have to pay more for each dial-a-ride rider, which is dial-a-ride is for the elderly and disabled, correct?
Yeah, the dial-a-ride program is specifically for those who have a disability. It's a paratransit program. They have to be, you know, approved. There's an application process to go through. So they may have some type of disability that doesn't allow them to utilize the fixed route service, whether that's cognitive or physical disability. You know, but again, what we run into with that is CyRide's using 5310 funds to help pay for part of that service, and those are still only reimbursed at 50%. So the city has to help and match that 50% as well. So if we were to reduce the amount of service that we provide in the city of Ames due to lack of funding, and we still contract with the Dial-A-Ride program, the cost per trip to CyRide for that program is gonna increase dramatically. And we've already experienced this due to COVID. So it's kind of a compounding issue. I think there's been a big misconception with folks because transportation, our funding streams are very complex in comparison to a lot of different businesses, or if you look at the human health service sector, our funding streams are just very complicated. One of the things, some of the funding that we receive, and I'm not sure who on the Board of Supervisors sits on the Aging Resources Board, but we do have a contract with Aging Resources of Central Iowa. And in Story County for fiscal year 20, that was $30,800. And again, those dollars are still required to have a 50% match. And we can use the asset funding and we can use the 5311 funds as matching, but we still do have to match all of these dollars. So when we start taking, you know, services out of the city of Ames, again, those costs per trip go up and it becomes harder and more complicated for us to find the matching dollars.
And
I have to follow up here, Julia. Okay, yep. Just to clarify for everybody, because Brooke got, you know, kind of going one way. For most people who might listen to this, I don't think they understand that Dial-A-Ride and Herta's regular door-to-door pickup service looks no different to the consumer. That, in other words, you're giving rides in the city of Ames to people who are not elderly or disabled per Dial-A-Ride. So I just wanted to make that point because that might be confusing to some people. Not everybody riding Herta door-to-door in Ames, in fact, qualifies for the Dial-A-Ride funding. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Loris, for clarifying that. That is something that even for those who are qualified on the Dial-A-Ride program, it's often very, very confusing on when they're riding Herta service and when they're riding the Sci-Ride Dial-A-Ride program. An example of that is we have someone with a physical disability who uses Herta to get back and forth to work. She works at a school. She, you know, uses Herta to get back and forth under the Dial-A-Ride program. And then there's other times when she needs to go to, let's say, Story City or even Boone, maybe to a specialty doctor, and she rides under the Herta service. And so it's, you know, we have a different fare and there's some different protocols, and it can be very confusing, especially since all of our vehicles are marked the same and we're blending all of the riders on the vehicles together for efficiency purposes. That is something, again, that's complicated and often is misunderstood. So thank you, Loris, for pointing that out.
Loris, I just want to make sure that it's also understood that our federal and our state funding is based on the number of rides that we take in a given year and the number of miles that we put on the buses. So if we are forced to provide fewer trips in the city of Ames, that is eventually going to then impact the federal and state funding that we get. So there will be less money altogether to provide services in the rural counties that our 5311 funding is actually geared toward using. And the 5310 funding that we received from Sci-Ride through the paratransit, they didn't get any CARES Act funding. Sci-Ride got CARES Act funding for their fixed route services, but there was no CARES Act funding provided for 5310 recipients. So the money that we get for that, there isn't anything else to draw from because there wasn't any additional money given.
Julia, the money that you receive from the CARES Act, when does it have to be expended by?
It has to be expended by June 20th of 2022. So that funding has gone through the Iowa DOT, and the Iowa DOT had to actually do the grant for this funding with the FTA, and then we were notified of how much we're going to get actually from the DOT. So the DOT put in their grant that all of that money would be expended by 2022. Herta took all of that money. We requested all of that money be used only for operational costs, so that it was all used for operational costs, and so there isn't anything else that will be used for it. we can't use it to purchase buses per se or any type of capital equipment. It is to be used specifically for operating costs. And HRDA did that because we don't know how long we're going to be affected by the COVID conditions that we're living in right now. And we wanted to make sure that we still have enough money to continue to provide services for people. So that's what we're doing. And we didn't get all of that money at one time. It's not like they just throw it at us and say, here's all this money. We still have to go through a process of requesting it. And we request it on a quarterly basis. Is that right, Brooke?
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Obviously with COVID and things have impacted our outreach efforts, but one of the things that we had previously worked on through some funding with Story County, thank you, Board of Supervisors, was having an outreach person for Story County and making sure that writers were getting on the most appropriate funding sources. And through that process, we were able to get some writers moved over both to the elderly waiver and over on the Dial-A-Ride program. So that was going well until everything kind of hit back in March. However, Julia, we were just awarded a grant to bring on a mobility person. It was a federal grant. And so we're looking to start that process up again in the first week of August. We'll have to do a lot more remote working and be a little more creative about that, but that'll be nice to know that that program will continue and is funded through fiscal 21. And then just kind of a little bit more, I guess, about our request today. I know this is a lot of information, and Julia and I talked about that earlier. Some things we feel like we've told you before, and but it's a lot to remember, and it's just a lot to talk about all at once. So really what brought us to the table today is again, looking at shifting how we're using those asset funds from the county. We understand that we're not going to be living in the world of COVID with reduced ridership forever. So if we need to go back to the Ames City Council and ask them to provide more funding for the trips within the city of Ames through that assets process, that the time to do that really is at their budget season. And we need kind of a stopgap measure to help us provide service within the city of Ames, at least till we know what happens through their budgeting process. And we know that the funds from the county, which are allocated through the asset process, aren't going to be fully exhausted if service levels continue to remain of what they are today. So wanting to have the ability to be flexible with those funds, but still provide the service to the residents of Story County, just including residents of Ames in those trips. And then the other request is looking at employment transportation. As I know everyone in Story County is aware of the low unemployment rate and the difficulty that the employers are having in getting people to work. And then of course, the workforce having challenges in getting there and the cost of providing that service. Vanpools are a much less expensive way of getting employees to work, especially those who commute long distances. And so we wanted to take a look at it providing some of the asset funds for that and understanding that through the time of COVID, it's going to be difficult for HRDA to maintain the drivers to be able to provide the service, and it could be done more cost effectively under a vanpool program.
How would a vanpool program work?
So HRDA has an agreement in place with Enterprise, and they have the vehicles and they have staff that go and meet with the employers. And they really look for employees who live in the same area and work near each other. They don't have to work at the same exact employer, but just near each other. And they combine them together. And so it could be 5 people, it could be 7 people, it could be 15 people, and they ride the same vehicle. So there's one person designated to be the driver,
And that driver rides the van at no cost. And then there's a backup driver put in place for vacation or sick days, emergencies, what have you. And that backup driver has a reduced cost for the service, but essentially all of the employees would be riding, sharing the cost of that van. So what we're looking to do is to help supplement that to get that started and make it cost affordable for the employees and help meet that employer need.
Who provides the liability insurance and the auto insurance?
That would be Enterprise.
And would we see that documentation?
Yeah, HRTA has that already through our contract with them.
That could be, you know, with it not being, is this somebody with a chauffeur's or commercial license or anything like that? It's just somebody driving who's really a customer with a regular Iowa driver's license?
Yep, and they do all of the licensing checks. They take all that work and responsibility upon themselves through the contract that HRTA has in place with them.
The contract HRTA has in place with Enterprise?
Correct.
Your contract with Enterprise covers all the potential legal liabilities?
Correct.
Brooke, is this not basically the same concept of program and the same requirements that DART does? We've got people riding to Des Moines every day who are working in Des Moines from Story County who are riding DART, and it's basically the same program, but Enterprise is owning the vehicles and handling a lot of the work.
Yep, correct. It's the same concept. Van pools are just one type of service delivery for public transportation. Just like fixed route is a mode of delivery. In the larger cities, there's high-speed rail as an example. So it's just a different mode of transportation, but it's cost-effective because there's not a paid driver. And the insurance levels aren't necessarily what would be required of a public body to carry, but it's still sufficient and meets the requirements.
So I'd like to go back, you don't have to go back to the slide, but you talked about already HRTA is providing 12% of the rides are getting people to and from the workforce, correct? Mm-hmm. So all we're doing is providing a different vehicle, literally, okay, but a different mode. This is not it's already in our scope of service. We're taking people to work every day and bringing them home every day.
But you're doing it with a driver who's a HRTA employee.
I understand. So, and for that though, you're talking about the risks, is now the risk is to be transferred over. The other thing in HRTA having the contract with Enterprise rather than these individual people going out trying to do this or trying to do it via their employers, okay, as Brooke already pointed out, is you could pair up people who don't work for the same company. But when the contract is with HRTA and giving HRTA some, you know, input here on this and getting the documents, et cetera, HRTA gets credit for those miles. Remember Julia said earlier that the number of people riding, the number of people miles, and then there's another transport miles, those miles are able to be counted by HRTA toward that funding breakout that happens 2 years later. Okay, so it's a way for everyone to benefit from a system that especially is good. And I'm gonna, if you guys would address what is the number one thing that employers ask that they want that HRTA can't provide right now related to hours, et cetera. Brooke or Julia?
Yeah, employment transportation has been something that we've consistently heard of a need, especially in Story County. We're not just seeing it in Story County, we're seeing it across our region and talking with our peers across the state that, you know, before COVID happened, the unemployment rates were very, very low, and that was a challenge. Everyone was fighting to get folks from other areas that maybe had a higher unemployment rate into areas that have a lower unemployment rate to help with staffing levels. And so that was one of the things HRDA had been working on over the last couple of years to help meet that demand. And going back, Loris, to what you said about the funding formula, again, van pools are a different mode of transportation, so they're reported differently, and this would be a diversified revenue line for us. So these trips would be reported, instead of under demand response, they would be reported as van pool, and we could look at getting another type of federal funding in to help cover those operations. And there would be a two-year lag, as you stated, but you know, really in looking at helping HRDA increase the types of funding that we receive, and at the same time, being able to provide more services within the community.
And where I was headed with the flexibility request, the hours that it's affordable to have a driver on call versus the hours that are needed, especially by some of our employers like Burke, et cetera.
It was so, we had a meeting a month or two ago, a Zoom meeting with several employers from Story County to talk about what the barriers were to get to using HRDA or Cyride to get people to and from work. And it was specifically the hours, especially the late night hours, the after HRDA service hours, the very early morning hours. A lot of those, and then some of them were just actually the drop-off spots for the fixed route, and it not being convenient either due to those hours. So van pools will allow much more flexibility. And the reason that we chose to contract with Enterprise in doing this is we want to do this as a pilot program to see how do van pools, what's the success of van pools? And if it isn't a successful program, there's nothing to say that at some point in time, HRDA couldn't have their own vehicles and create their own van pool program. But we didn't want any upfront cost. And this allows us to say, how successful is this as an option to do this? The caveat with that is there needs to be some type of supplemental payment that we need to make in order to be brought into it. Otherwise, Enterprise could just go out and, you know, recruit these businesses on their own and take HRDA completely out of it. But because we are the transportation provider in Story County, if we're a part of that and we contract with them, we can get additional dollars, which very well may eventually help us create our own van pool program. That we have much more, you know, control over how that works. But this is a safe option because there really is very little upfront cost for us or risk.
So your slide shows two items, and one of them is allow some county asset funds to supplement City of Ames transportation. And the other one is van, and it doesn't say how much, and I'm wondering if you have a dollar amount that you're thinking that's going to be. And then I'd have the second question about the funding source for the employment transportation. What specifically are you asking?
So we talked about that, and at this point, you know, there's so much unknown with COVID, we're not sure what that's going to look like. We do know that based on the ridership within Story County for the rural communities, if everything stayed the same as the levels back in May and even June, we would only be drawing down about $30,000 to $40,000 for fiscal 21 of the asset funds that are allocated to HRDA through the county funding. So what we don't want to do is change the amount of service that we make available to the county residents. So I guess we want that to be a little bit fluid so that we can adapt to the pandemic as it continues to evolve. I'm sure everyone's kind of at the same concerns about the potential second wave, and we just don't really know what we're going to get into as we approach the fall.
You're asking for flexibility on that and assuring us that you're not going to draw down so much that it would impact the services that this money normally goes for.
Correct.
Is that okay?
Well, and I think what they're wanting to do is use those 5311 federal dollars to still meet the needs in the rural area.
Right.
Use the county dollars to pull down, because it's not going to be a direct allocation, but a pull down of those funds, if I'm getting correct.
But the 5311 funds won't just do it. You'll still need some of the county asset funds for the rural areas, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Because the 5311 funds, we can only draw down at 50%. There has to be another 50% match on those funds as well.
You have to keep enough county funds to match that 50%. And you're saying, obviously, you don't know what's going to happen, but you're going to watch that to make sure we don't get in trouble in that area.
Correct.
So, and Julie,
and we could provide whatever those reports look like, you know, so that you understand on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis what we're doing and what that looks like. We want to be very transparent about this. So you just need to tell us what it is that you want us to provide you, and we can do that so that you're a second set of eyes in looking and making sure that we're on track with what we've told you we're going to do.
And Julia, to clarify, related to the reporting, is that now the change is that you've got to show the match to the feds, right? Where before you just had to show overall lump sums came into HRDA to match at 50 or $1 to $1. And now you've got to hook them up with the rural services, right? Okay. So it's not going to be the whole $111,000 that you're going to be able to pull down necessarily. But you can match, you also are able to match your contract or subscription, or here you call it service ones. So if you're giving people rides from Zeering to come into Heartland Senior Services, that amount that's paid by, say, Medicaid, that's the match for pulling down another matching 5311 also fund, correct?
It could be. It could be depending on the person if they're qualified for Medicaid, but yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. It really is a big change.
And then the funding for the van pool pilot.
We had talked about the carryover from fiscal year 20. Have you guys decided that that's what you want to do about that?
That's what Brooke and I discussed on a way to be able to do that. We believe there was, Brooke, you had those numbers. Was it like $12,000 and some of carryover from fiscal year 20?
Yeah, Sandra put that together for us. Sorry, I don't have that.
It's about 12,300 general basic and about 3,000 local option. The local option was my understanding that can't be used for city banks.
Correct. So to repeat, in case you couldn't hear Sandra, it was 12,300, you said, or?
Yes.
Yeah, 12,300 from our general fund, which can be used anywhere. And then about 3,000 from our rural fund, which means it has to be for a rural ride. You know, somebody, if you're gonna use it vanpooling wise, has to be for somebody that's outside of, or people who are outside of the city of Ames.
Okay, so that was our request then for the van pools in order to be able to use those in the coming fiscal year. Fiscal year 21 would be the 12,300 and then the 3,000, only with the caveat that it would only be used for rural communities.
So, and I guess I have a question. So was that additional? Due to, I'm just wondering, where were those funds from? Were they from were you not continuing to have the outreach staff or where did the excess dollars, what wasn't pulled down to for those additional dollars, or they'll be there?
Those were the asset dollars. That wasn't the outreach that the board approved separately last fall. It was the regular asset funding, and that happened because of the reduced ridership with COVID. So because we had less people riding, we did not exhaust our asset funds for fiscal year 20.
Gotcha.
And then the outreach funds, were those all utilized?
They were not. After the governor's proclamation back in March, where everything closed, we couldn't have our outreach person going out within the community, so we stopped drawing down any of those funds accordingly. And we're not asking to carry those funds over.
Okay. Any other questions, board?
I guess the one additional question I have. So of the funds you're looking to swap, which would be, is it about 110,000? Is that about right? So are those all general fund dollars? They are, okay, I just wanna make sure on my-
Yes, they are, I'll answer for them. Yes, they are all general fund dollars.
There's
only
about 30 or 40. It's not the full
110. Yeah, Sandra. No, I just want to make sure that they were all general fund dollars in that pot.
Gotcha.
Sandra would like to contribute also.
I just wanted to add that the carryover dollars they're asking about, the board has already authorized that flexibility, and we have included that information in their asset contract. We're still waiting on another original signed copy, but other than that, that contract is out there, so we would need to amend that based on what you do today.
We just need to, whatever we do, but the dollars, you were saying, they've already been carried over.
But we still have to approve what they'll be used for.
Right.
Yes. Okay. So are there any, Julia or Brooke, is there anything else that you would like to add, or have we covered it all?
I think we've covered it of what we want and what we need in order to, you know, move forward with this fiscal year. So we just appreciate your consideration of our request. And I know it was a lot of information today, but it was a good discussion. Thank you for allowing us to come.
Julia, did you say that you had Ames trips last fiscal year were 2,608?
Yes.
And what have you done so far this year? I mean, I know this fiscal year would have just started. So what was it the year before? I heard you say something like 2608 or 2611.
This is Brooke, and I'm sorry I don't have the total number for fiscal year 20 City of Ames trips pulled up. I think the number you're referring to is when we talked about the asset funding from the City of Ames only being at about $41,000. And so that would only pay for 2,608 trips in a year based on our current per trip cost under the asset program. In July of 2019 alone, we provided 2,011 trips wholly within the City of Ames that were not under the Dial-A-Ride program. So obviously we would be drawing down those City of Ames asset funding if we did it on a per trip allocation. It would be drawn down within the first couple of months during normal, not COVID times, and then during COVID service levels, we would anticipate drawing them down within the first 3 to 4 months.
Okay, so
and that's at current COVID levels.
Yeah. Okay, so that kind of adds into another question with the flexibility or flipping kind of what you're wanting. So the county dollars that would generally been for the rural area, you want to flip to use those federal dollars there. So what, I guess I'm trying to figure out, so what would the county dollars then be used for in the city if you're keeping the city dollars there?
So
what am I missing?
Yeah, I think, Brooke, when you first said that 2011 figure, you know, the 2011 one-way trip rides, it sounded like it was for the whole year. It's 1 month,
no,
right?
I heard that.
Okay, so the county, what happens is they take it and they pull all the, say, the list of city names. I'm going to paraphrase for you a little bit. Then they take out all the contract riders who are like the mainstreams of the CICS. And then they're going to take out anybody that can be billed to another source of funding, which might be, say, a United Way trip or something. And what's left then is what has been covered by $5311. The county dollars will go in being charged at whatever your rate is there per one-way trip to help pay for some of those Ames riders. What will happen is Ames still, if they go back to pre-COVID rates for 2019, Ames still has a shortage of rides. All the door-to-door rides won't be able to be given without additional funding also. Did that help, Lisa?
Kind of. So the $5311 previously could be used in the city.
Correct. They were, yeah.
And so now they're wanting to use them in the rural.
Right, because that's the only place they can be used now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's helping here.
Right.
Just in there.
Right.
Okay.
So that's how they were paying for some of those.
Okay.
You know, I think the other thing, the broader picture is, remember, we the HRTA board and the HRTA already burned through 1.4, 1.5 million in cash reserves. So you know from me that the HRTA board has been keeping a very close profile. Yes?
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in or Deb Schildroth has her hand raised. I think she'd like to comment.
Okay, after I'm done. Sure thing. So the, So coming back to, we've already looked at having to change the service delivery model. So not everybody, am I correct that if we went back to pre-COVID levels, when it goes back, you know, that far down the line, that there's a possibility that not every rider is going to get door-to-door service in the city of Ames, correct? That would be the worst case scenario, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Let's let Deb comment, please. Thanks for saying that.
There she is.
She's still muted.
Deb, you're muted.
Can you unmute yourself, Deb?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good morning. Just a couple of comments to consider as you go forward with your decision. The unit rate that's in the current fiscal year contract between the City of Ames and HRTA is $17.27 per one-way trip. That's the rate that was in the asset budget book that we received from HRTA last September. So we went ahead and used that rate. And so using that rate would then render 2,374 trips. So a little bit different than what was previously stated. And the increases, I looked in the last three fiscal years from the city, and the increases in the amount to HRTA for the in-city trips has averaged between 2 to 3% each year. And that again is based on the request in the budget that they submit through asset. And a question, I guess, at some point that HRTA can respond, and I can talk to them offline about this, is if they plan on billing 1/12 to the city, it's difficult to determine how many actual trips are provided each month when we're just doing the 1/12 allocation. So that's something we can figure out at a later date. And then the last thing is the discussion about the dial-a-ride, the cost of dial-a-ride services going up. If there is no additional city funding for HRDA through the asset process, wondered if those expenses or those costs have been allocated out, or if there's an idea of how much that that would end up being, so that that can be considered in any discussions that the transit board or the city council may have going forward. Thank you.
I think that's a good point.
So the numbers that I used earlier on the trips were based on not on 2020, because we don't have all of our statistics finalized yet. So that's why the unit rate was a little different. We're using the older rate, not the current fiscal 21 rate. And it was just to kind of give everyone an example of how quickly those funds could be exhausted. And I'd also like to add that we do provide a trip accounting back to not only the county, but to the city, so that the city had the information on the trips and the support for the trips that were provided. And Deb, I believe you've seen those. I think you sent me over a few questions a couple months ago about one of them, maybe back in March or April. You started reviewing those, I believe.
Yeah, as of March, I started.
Okay, so we do provide the information to the city, even though the claim only requests for 1/12, but it's something that before we looked at making any changes, again, this is a new fiscal year, it kind of makes sense with the timing that we have this conversation now, especially as we look to bringing service levels back, and as people are starting to get out a little bit more than they were before. And as our community partners, I know Heartland's not open right now, but eventually they're going to want to try and get their business back to normal. Mainstream is, you know, experiencing the same thing. And we are starting to see a spike in requests for trips. Our call volumes have increased. The visits to our website have increased. And that fluctuates between about 15 and 25%. And that started in the month of June as some of the governor's restrictions were lifted. So we're trying to be proactive and understand what we're able to do to be able to tell the community, because if this is going to affect, you know, not everyone who goes to a mainstream program is covered under Medicaid, and they may not have a funding source. They may be going to the programs and accessing some of those, but they're really doing that as what, you know, someone in the insurance world might call as a private pay. And so they need to understand what levels HRDA is going to be able to provide so that they can make those plans accordingly. And that's why HRDA really felt kind of a sense of urgency in addressing some of these concerns before it got to a point where we had exhausted the other asset funds and we were saying, now what do we do? So we want to take a look at what our options are and how can we use the funds that are allocated to HRDA currently in the way to best provide service within the county.
Board, any other questions? If not, anybody else on the call who has a question? Do we want further discussion, or do we want to get a motion on the table? And may I suggest something? We have a slide here, items for Board of Supervisors consideration. We might want to add a little more specificity to the language we've been given. And I think on the second bullet, the employment transportation, we should reference the $15,300. It's the FY20 carryover. But the first one, I'm struggling a little bit if we want to add some more language there. The only thing I'm thinking is that an assurance that this will not reduce services to rural residents in Story County. So I'll leave it up to either of you if you want to make a motion and include either of those two things.
Sure, I'll make the motion and then we can talk if we need to further. Is that okay, Lisa? Or?
Sure, no, that's okay. Fine.
So I move that we allow some county asset funds to supplement to be expanded, to be able to use, to be drawn down for rides in the city of Ames, with the stipulation that enough funds remain allocated to non-Ames riders to assure all requests from outside of Ames are met.
Do you want to say for fiscal year 2021?
For fiscal year 2021.
Thank you. So that's the first motion. Is there a second?
Wait a second and then ask for an amendment.
I would second it.
Okay. Then let it die. You give it a try, Lisa. Okay.
Okay. So
there's no second. The motion dies for lack of a second. Right. Supervisor Hiddens.
Okay. So basically everything Laura's just said with the addition of requiring HRDA to provide monthly reports to the Board of Supervisors on the utilization of those funds.
I second Supervisor Hedden's motion with everything I had plus the additional.
Further discussion? If not, Hedden's?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Now I would entertain a motion on the proposed pilot van pools in Story County for employment transportation.
I would move that we approve use from the fiscal year 20 asset carryover of $12,400 plus
$300,
plus $3,000, $12,300 from the general fund and approximately $3,000 from the rural fund to be used to fund a pilot van pool program in Story County with monthly reports to come back to the Board of Supervisors about program use and fund use.
Second.
Okay. It's been a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Hiddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you very much for all the information.
Thank you for approving.
I just want to say thanks. I see Barb Neal, the director of SciRide, and thanks to Deb Shildroth. Those are the two names I recognized here, both from the City of Ames, for sitting in on this and watching. Thank you.
Next, we will go to public forum number two, comments from the public, items not on the agenda. The board may take action, may not take action due to requirements of open meetings law, but may do so in the future. So I'll open public forum number two. Are there any members of the public who have any comments for us? I don't see any hands raised. Do you, Barb?
No.
Okay, thank
any
you.
Any text messages?
Nope, don't see any.
Okay, then I will close public forum number two. Next, we have liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. And in the interest of time, I'll pass.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I want to bring up to date is on the Hunger Coalition. From the meetings last week, to let you know that the United Way Virtual Fund Food Drive has raised over $43,000, has distributed over $15,000, which means that there's still food coming in on donations from churches and that type of thing. And United Way is actually giving out some funds to some entities that are not a formal member of United Way or the coalition, but because the needs out there, some of the local churches are doing smaller food banks. So heads up to them, and I'll go ahead and pass on the rest. How's that?
Thank you. Next, I would entertain a motion to go into closed session. But first, Shelley, can I ask, is Lucy available? Okay. I would entertain a motion to go into closed session.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Hedens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion approved. Let's take a, can you pause the recording and I'll go find the auditor.
Recording.
You got it?
Yep.
Wait, I gotta sit down. Hold on.
manure.
Okay, it is July 21, 2020. It is 12:09 p.m. and Story County Board of Supervisors is returning to open session. I would entertain a motion.
I would move that we accept the investigator's recommendations as presented during the closed session.
I second. Okay, any further discussion? If not, Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Let's see, do we have anything else? The only other thing we have left then is adjournment.
I so move we adjourn.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Stand adjourned. Thank you very much.